Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, in Juneau. This is M0HBR in central London. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Good morning, Bill. I was hoping you'd show up this evening. I've been doing a little work there.
Yeah, Mike. Good to talk to you. Yeah. Well, we've been melting a little solder here in London after many weeks of relative inactivity here. I decided that it got time for me to build something and get my hands dirty and generate some solder smoke. So I didn't do anything really impressive electronically, but I put a proper cover on the PC board box that houses my FET amp for the 20 meter DSB rig. So I mean, I up until now I had this thing spread out all over the workbench, and I was still working people with it. I think it's a lot of fun when you build a rig and it's still spread out on the workbench and you're already talking to people. So, but there comes a time when you have to put things in a real cabinet, and I think you get a lot more RF shielding. So that is my solder smoke contribution for the morning, and I guess this is solder smoke 29. It's the 6th of August, 2006, and it's 0644 Greenwich Mean Time, 744 British Summer Time, Sunday morning. Back to you, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
Roger, Bill, and good on the, yeah, that's the hard part for me. My stuff sometimes looks good, but I think other people do better job at making stuff look good. If I make stuff look good, it's usually with enough Bondo and enough sanding and enough carving that I get. But getting things nice and square and sharp edged, I'm not too good at that there, Bill. It's 10:46 here in Juneau, Alaska, in the evening. So six and so that's the time difference there. Well, I've been programming like crazy. Remember I told you about VMware. I spent the past week, most of it, putting a mainframe operating system underneath Linux, underneath VMware, and that wasn't adequate. I had to make it as small as possible. So I was trying to make a VMware appliance that ran under the VMware player that ran MVS, which is the mainframe operating system we use at work. Got that working, and that was kind of a fun endeavor. I was up way too late, so I'm a little bit tired and worn out from partly that, Bill. Not a lot of soldering, a lot of computering here lately. But I have a couple items that I did a couple weeks ago that would be fun to talk about. A two-resistor impedance bridge that is really worth thinking about. Back to you there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Okay, Mike, great. Well, my cabinets I are never going to win any prizes for aesthetics. They're very firmly in the ugly construction tradition. The DSB rig, I've been talking about the pictures of it. It's on the www.gadgeteer.us website under, I think, 20 meter portable rig or portable rig. It's just bits of a PC board soldered together in a roughly rectangular way. It's the best way to put it. And I just had to get the kind of metal cabinet on the top, so I just took a piece of scrap aluminum and kind of bent the thing down on either side to make kind of a lip, and then I drilled holes through the aluminum and the PC board at, I might add, exactly the same spot, which is important in this operation. Then of course you have the problem because you put the I was explaining this to my son as we were going along. I said, you know, the problem is you can put the screw in, but you got the cabinet on, so how the heck are you going to hold the nut in place? So I did the old solder the nut down onto the PC board. So you've got on the inside of the cabinet the nut just held by solder up against the inside of the board. And presto, you just put the screw in, and if the hole's lined up, the little, I think it's a 440 screw goes through, and it tightens up there, and it looks relatively professional and serious. You know, the other problem with this, Mike, is sometimes you're rewarded for your endeavor in making the thing look neat by suddenly finding out that your the cabinet that you've installed in hopes of cutting down on feedback and stray RF getting in there actually drives the device that worked fine before into feedback, which is particularly galling. You know, you go through all this hassle to get it looking good and sealed up RF-wise, and then for some reason, now that you've got it in an RF-type box, now it oscillates. That's happened to me before. I don't think it happened this time. I got on the air and with the thing and worked a station in Alicante, and I worked a station in the former Yugoslavia and the German station and it was all great fun on 20 meters. So I think the thing is working, but yeah, anyway, that was my contribution. You know, it's funny though, if you're a home brewer, you know what I mean. When you finish something like this, your hands feel like a little bit, I don't know, a little bit tired, and it's kind of a good feeling because you scratched up your fingers a bit, and you know what I'm talking about. It's that good feeling of actually doing something with your hands and building something. And my son was with me in the shack when we were doing it, so we had fun together with it. So anyway, this has inspired me, and I'm going to be trying now to melt more solder in the weeks ahead. It's kind of warm here in London, and I have a little air conditioner. It's kind of an R2-D2 kind of portable air conditioner that they have over here. So that might motivate me to spend more time in the now comfortable shack. Anyway, but tell us about the two resistor impedance bridge. I saw the website that you sent over on that. That looked really interesting. And two resistors. Wow. So tell us about it. The KL7R M0HBR.
Oh, great on the brass nuts and everything there. Yeah, I've made a number of key paddles and straight keys. I've made paddles like for electronic keys. There's one of the QRP clubs, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who. I think it's the NorCal club that has some drawings on how to make a single paddle and a double paddle circuit board based straight keys and iambic paddles, and they use the trick of soldering a brass nut to screw into, and I've done that lots of times. So, well, you know, I'm actually pretty tired, Bill. I'm looking at this schematic, and even though it's only two resistors, I don't know if I'm up to describing this thing tonight. But I'll just give you a tickler. I think it was these badges that you use. You hold up a badge to a door, and you get a proximity detector. There's a name for it, and it's a key card that's a badge that you hold up next to a door, and the door sends RF at the badge, and the badge is a tuned circuit or number of tuned circuits that resonate at certain frequencies, and the door then decodes what number corresponds to all the tuned circuits you had, and then opens the door or not based on your access. And there's a name for that thing, but it's escaping me at this point. Anyway, on that site, they had this thing for tuning the antennas of these little key cards. And I saw it, and I said, this is just so cool. And it basically, if you take out your pen and you draw an input side resistor, 100 ohm input resistor across ground and your signal source. So you have 100 ohm shunt to ground across your signal source, and you have a 50 ohm in series with the top of the 100 ohm resistor from your signal source to your variable impedance load. And what you do is you put an XY oscilloscope, and you put X at the junction of the 100 and the 50, and Y at the output of the 50 ohm, and this thing will draw a circle based on the amount of reactance of the load, and it will draw a tilt based on the amount of resistance of the load, and so you basically set it up into a 50 ohm dummy load for a certain tilt and zero circularity. And so that means you've got 50 ohms, no reactance. And then you put your real load on there, and you tune the scope for the same tilt and reactance. It wound up being more than two resistors. I had to put a couple of trimmer capacitors, fairly large trimmer capacitors, in series and in shunt there to tune out the reactance of the 50 ohm. Yeah, that's it. RFID. Those are RFID cards, and I found it doing. There's a CCITT or there's a spec for tuning these RFID cards, and I found the schematic on there, and it's really really interesting. But anyway, this is. I don't know if you've ever played with an octopus. It's sort of the same idea of an octopus. I've often thought that that would make a really good kit for the AMQRP club or for the. Or even for the QRPL, is to make a little octopus. It would just take eight wires, you know, octa, and a transformer and a couple of resistors, and it's a really maybe a BNC cable cut in half, and it'd make a really good addition to a scope. Have you ever seen an octopus? And was I too tired to be able to explain the two resistor impedance bridge there, Bill? M0HBR, KL7R.
M0HBR, K. Whoops, look who's tired. KL7R, M0HBR. No, you were absolutely lucid there, Mike. Yeah, I got it. I see it. The octopus. And I remember you in one of the websites that you sent around, and we'll have to post this somewhere for the listeners. But I think a Google search on oscilloscope and octopus will get them to where we're talking about. I can't imagine too many websites that have both the words oscilloscope and octopus in there. Let's see. Mike's posting it up here. Oh, he's got it on. It's on your website. It's on Mike's website. So if you go to Mike's website, that's kl7r.hamradio.ch. You'll find what Mike's talking about. But, yeah, I remember it was interesting. One of the things that caught my eye was the inventor of the device, or at least the inventor of the name Octopus, was apparently a Marine Corps avionics tech, came up with the name. And it's a real, I agree with you, it's a real interesting sort of low-tech but extremely useful bit of test gear. And it would probably... put to good use the all the cheapo low band scopes that all of us have lurking underneath our workbench someplace. You know, all these old Heathkit scopes and that have an upper frequency limit of about 5 megacycles or something like that, and so we can't use them. Yeah, 5 megacycles. Yeah, so it's difficult to use them for real world test applications these days. But these scopes, the more you look at them, the more you think about it, there's a lot more that you could do with them. And this is definitely one of the big applications. You and I spoke also about the possibility. There was an article in Sprat a while back about how you could turn one of these things into kind of a poor man's spectrum analyzer, using a varactor diode and the sawtooth pattern that comes out of these scopes. basically to set it up so that your input circuit would tune across a frequency band as with the changing sawtooth voltage going to the varactor. But that's another application. But anyway, yeah, these things, there's a lot you could do with them. KL7R, M0HPR.
Yeah, Roger. That's the perfect use for them. That's when I used it first. The octopuses are great. You plug it in the wall, and you plug one wire into the X of your scope and the other wire into the Y of your scope, and then you have this test wire that's basically ground and a contact point, and basically two probes of a contact test point, and you put it across a resistor, and depending on the resistor, it'll show up as a short or a vertical line, or if it's a high-value resistor, it'll show up like an open or a flat line. If it's a capacitor, it'll show up, some sort of circular reactive, and same with an inductor. If it's a diode, it'll show up as an L, like a curve trace. If it's a Zener diode, it'll show up as a Z. So you can take live circuits, not live circuits, but you can take in-circuit test, and you can put an octopus across some transistor and tell, well, there's a coil and a capacitor attached to the base of a transistor, and the transistor seems to be working. It's really useful. I use it all the time for testing transistors. I think that'd be a really good one for one of the clubs to pick up, and I'm sure you could get all the pieces together for $10 and sell them for quite a bit more, and people would use them. Like I say, I'm a little tired, Bill. I'm a little scattered, but one of the major things that happened this week is we had some feedback from Tony Fishpool about audio problems on EchoLink itself, on Solder Smoke itself, to Linux boxes and to key fob type MP3 players. And Tony Fishpool you and I did some testing, and we found out that we were recording the podcast at too low a bit rate, and so in the future we'll record a higher bit rate so that we won't have the problems that we had with solder smoke. There was some talking about it on the QRPL list. I'll turn it over to you there, Bill. M0HPR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HPR. Yeah, well, thanks to Tony, and thanks to everybody else who sent in feedback. It's gratifying to know that folks are interested enough in solder smoke to let us know when there are technical difficulties. And Mike, thanks to you for all the hard work and wizardry in getting them resolved. I think we're now key fob compatible. somebody wrote in and said that wanted to know what the podcast equivalent of the phrase on the air is. I guess we can't say that we're on the air. I came up with kind of on the pod, but that sounds kind of freaky. I don't know. So we'll have to come up with another expression. We're still hoping that some can come up with an album cover or a simple design for Solder Smoke logo. We'll put it to use. We're looking for folks with some graphic skills or artistic talent in this area. Hey, let's see. One thing I wanted to mention. I came across a video clip on this YouTube system. YouTube is, I'm sure people are aware of it, but sort of one of the latest amazing World Wide Web phenomenon. You could people are able to upload video clips very easily, make them available to the world, or keep them private, whatever. I recently used it to send some video clips to relatives, and when we came back from summer vacation. But somebody found and made a video clip of Richard Feynman, a physicist, talking about the intriguing nature of radio waves, This is the guy who won the Nobel Prize for quantum electrodynamics, and you know, widely regarded as one of the, if not, well, one of the most brilliant physicists of the 20th century. But he came up with this, I thought, a really, really neat video. I'd never heard Feynman talking and never seen him in action. But there he was with his still very thick Brooklyn accent discussing kind of the wonder of radio waves. So I posted it to QRPL. And if anybody wants to see it, you could go to the www.gadgeteer.us website, my website, and you'll see there's a blog, a link to the blog. I have a blog, and it's just easier to post things to the blog sometimes. So I posted this to the blog. So if you click on the blog, you'll be quickly taken to a link to the Feynman clip. To the Feynman clip, and you could also, of course, just go to YouTube and search for Feynman, F-E-Y-N-M-A-N. But I think people would get a kick out of that. I really liked watching. As a New Yorker, Mike, I really found it interesting to hear Dr. Feynman talking about quantum electrodynamics with a thick Brooklyn accent. KL7RM0HBR.
That was such a wonderful thing you did there, Bill. I loved that video. I played it 5 times to myself. I sent it to my wife and my son and all my geek friends. That was wonderful. And about 3 days later, I'm going to really bore people here. About 3 days later, I was listening to the Moody Blues, and I didn't realize these guys were electrical engineers. I thought they were into other methods of learning. But anyway, I'll read 2 sentences of the word. Here it comes. This garden universe vibrates complete. Some we get a sound so sweet. Vibrations reach up to become light, and then through gamma out of sight. And I said, man, that's Richard Feynman right there, Bill. Over.
I'm flabbergasted, Mike. I was so blown away by that. It took me a while to find the push to talk button. Gentlemen, the first ever solder smoke poetry. You just heard it. Mark your calendars. We've had book reviews. We've had movie reviews. But that was our first ever solder smoke poetry. Back to you, Mike.
I was blown away, too. I hadn't heard the Moody Blues in years. And I found a CD, and I was playing it at work. And that thing just jumped out, man. The Richard Feynman face jumped in my head. And I knew that the lead singer in the Talking Heads was an electrical engineer, but I had no idea that the guys in the Moody Blues were natural physicists. They used the word 2 notes of the chord. That's our fluoroscope. I mean, these guys have like an oscilloscope in their head. It's good stuff. Speaking of spacey music, I was thinking something like the cover of the Pink Floyd album with the prism and light beams coming out would be a really cool icon for solder smoke. But this is probably a good opportunity to mention that along with the troubles we had with solder smoke audio, we have and hosting on our media and archive.org, Bill has kindly offered one of his sites and hosted solder smoke there. So I uploaded the solder smoke podcast to www.soldersmoke.com. I mean, how tough an address is that? Thanks, Bill, for that. Bill had it set up, and I uploaded the files, and so it's there. And so now a threat to the solder smokers of the world. If somebody doesn't come up with a better graphic than the one I put on www.soldersmoke.com, it's going to remain, and it's sort of an obnoxious soylent green color. So I'm sure that that folks will will come up with a better one than I did there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Hey, KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Mike. Because I think, well, let's put it, you know, my day job, let's put it diplomatically. I think that the color that is currently on the website will provide a strong incentive for Solder Smoke listeners to make some suggestions and perhaps offer improvements on the graphic for the program. How's that for a diplomatic response? But well, thanks to you, Mike, for doing the work to get all those digital digits and bits and files in place on soldersmoke.com, and hopefully this will make downloading easier for Solder Smoke listeners. Hey, if you don't mind, I'm going to hit the gong, which means it's time for Solder Smoke Mailbag. We mentioned a lot of feedback that we got on. Yeah, it was a loud one because we don't have any house guests. You can tell when we have house guests, I have to bang the gong lightly. But no house guests, so that was pretty much a full gong. But anyway, we mentioned the very helpful feedback that we got from everybody, mostly around the QRPL list, and some folks who sent it in direct, but that's been very helpful, and we appreciate all that. But this week, we have a special Solder Smoke mailbag, I just want to recognize Tony Fishpool for doing something I thought was just very nice. He's going to turn red with embarrassment for me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Tony not only helped us out with the technical difficulties, but in our last episode of Solder Smoke, I kind of just casually mentioned that I had lost my summer edition of Sprat. There are many, many wonderful things about Sprat, and one of them is the physical size. You could just kind of fold it up, stick it in your pocket. And I did that, and in the course of running around central London, it fell out of my pocket, so I lost it. And I just kind of casually mentioned that to you, Mike, on the last issue of Solder Smoke. And when I came home from work on, I guess, Thursday, there was an envelope, Sprat-sized envelope from the GQRP Club, and I said, "Wow, it's too early for the fall issue. What's going on?" And I opened it up, and there was a replacement copy of the lost summer episode. Tony very kindly took it on himself to send me a replacement copy, and there was a note inside that, but I didn't. It took me a minute to find the note, and I found myself standing there scratching my head, thinking, how did anybody know that I lost this thing? And then I remembered that it was the only way anyone could know was the mention that I made of it on Solder Smoke. So thanks very much to Tony, and this is an opportunity for me to point listeners to a really, really great website. Go to for the GQRP Club. You can find out all about Sprat and the many other services offered by GQRP at www.gqrp.com. That's just all together, www.gqrp.com. It's really, membership in the GQRP Club is a great deal. It's very, very inexpensive. You get one of the best homebrew ham radio magazines available. It's called Sprat. And it makes you part of a part of the worldwide Solder Smoke generating fraternity. So check out the website there. I think it's really worth it. And thanks again to Tony. Mike, that brings us up to about our optimum half hour limit. I know you're tired, but I'll turn it back over to you, and maybe it's getting about time to wrap up Solder Smoke 29. KL7R M0HBR.
All right, Bill. I'm ready to hit the rack. You guys are probably ready for breakfast. It's nice having you and Billy in the shack there with me this evening. Have a good morning, and I'm a little pooped. But everybody, check out www.soldersmoke.com. I don't know if we're going to be uploading to both our media and SolderSmoke.com, but we'll let everybody know. Have a good morning, Bill. KL7R, I'll be clear.
Yeah, okay, Mike. Yeah, it's time to go. Billy's already headed for the kitchen, so I'll be following up on a good night's sleep. And, yeah, symmetry to you and to all the Solder Smoke listeners out there. KL7R73 from M0HBR.